This is the Creating the Future podcast, and I'm your host, Jordan Kraus. Today, we're going to talk about real math versus fake math, and we've got our numeracy specialist, Aggie Post, to join in on the discussion. Aggie, welcome.
Thank you.
So, before we jump into the real math versus the fake math battle here, tell us about your teaching journey.
All right. Well, I've been teaching over 20 years. I kind of lost count at that point.
Once you get up to 20, yeah, two decades, it just...
It's past two decades, yeah. You know, and I've mostly worked with kids in the upper elementary grades, so mostly fourth through eighth grade, but mostly fourth and fifth has been my jam, so to speak. I worked in different districts, different charter schools, even a Christian school once, and over the years, I really changed my philosophy about how we teach math. Math has always been my passion, even though I was a regular classroom teacher elementary, and about 6 or 7, probably 7 years ago, I was I happened to just go to this workshop at the University of Arizona at the Center for Recruitment and Retention of Mathematics Teachers. And it was just a free workshop on multiplication and division for fourth graders. And that's about the time when we started teaching the Common Core standards. And mm-hmm. everybody was confused on how to do that. Everybody was like, what is all this?
Yeah, that came out, 2008, I think.
Right.
I remember that? Yeah, mm-hmm. 2008, 2009.
Yeah, and then eventually when I got... So at that point, I wasn't in the classroom, but when I had to actually teach it in fourth grade, I was like, okay, I need to know more about this. Mm-hmm. And so I went to this workshop, and I totally, my mind was blown at the fact that you can actually... have the kids conceptually understand things. You don't have to tell them what to do. They can actually discover it. And then there's all these models and strategies that kids can use that are actually very intuitive and helpful. So after I attended that first workshop, I attended every workshop that they ever offered. Yeah. And very soon the co-director recognized that I was always there and very involved. So she asked me to be one of the teacher leaders. And then since then, we have this impact program where several of us are actually teaching these workshops now. So every Saturday, there's 4-hour workshops on a variety of topics. And so that's kind of how I started being more of a teacher leader. And in addition to just working with kids, also working with teachers and helping them, helping to change their mindset about what math is and how they can make it more meaningful for students.
So you mentioned the introduction of the Common Core standards back, 15, 16 years ago. That's right close to about when I was getting into teaching. And I remember there being a lot of, public opinion, parent opinion, and teacher opinion as well about new math. And this doesn't make sense. And why does my kid have to make all these circles? But math is math, right? We've been grappling with that for, dozen plus 15, 16, 17 years. And now there's this term real math versus fake math. Set us straight, Aggie. You've been in this field for a number of years. Where is kind of this naysaying coming from? And tell us really what the research is saying. You're knee deep in that. So break down that fake math versus real math.
All right. So there's a lot there. Okay. I'm going to try.
Ready to go.
Okay. So first of all, I want to give credit where credit's due to this whole real math, fake math idea, because that wasn't my original idea. I got that from Pam Harris, whose podcast I listen to regularly on my way to work. And what she's the lady who also calls herself, her website is Math is Figureoutable. And she's one of those converts like I just described my own journey, where she used to teach very traditional high school math, and then she recognized through her own children, actually, when her own children were coming home with all these strategies, she was like, what, their strategy? So she's one of those who have completely pivoted, and she's a well-known, nationally known figure. So I got her the idea for real math versus fake math from her, because it resonated with what I already do and believe. And I'm like, oh, that's a great title for it. So basically, a lot of adults still in this country believe that math is one way. You just follow these steps on an algorithm, and that's how you do it. And unfortunately, what happened, the research is very clear that when we teach math that way, it has resulted in, I don't know the percentage, but I would say at least 60% of the population really not liking math and saying, I'm not a math person. Why? Because if they were taught to just follow procedures and never really have any options to think for themselves or figure out things on their own, then they think they're a bad math person if they can't produce somebody else's procedures. Mm. And so that's fake math. Fake math is when we think of it as just getting the answer by using these very prescribed steps.
Mm, these tricks.
Tricks.
And like, just to pause for a second. So let's think about kind of from a traditional sense, by the time a kiddo gets to, say, fourth grade, mm-hmm. like how many tricks, algorithms, right. would you estimate that they are having to keep stored up in their brain?
By then, you know, several dozen. I mean, I don't even know, you know, probably 20, 30. Mm-hmm. And by middle school, it's overwhelming, mm-hmm. you know, and that's why I think that's one of the reasons why we have all these kids. The older the kids get, starting around fourth grade, they start to really struggle in math, because they are taught this way. And so they can't hold all that information in their head. And they're like, oh, wait, am I supposed to, you know, add here or multiply? What was that rhyme that I learned? You know, that kind of stuff. And so they start to mix up those procedures if that's all they are, if they're just procedures without understanding.
So they don't have that conceptual understanding. They don't understand the concept of the relationship between numbers, which math is really just, it's about patterns and connections, right?
That's what it should be. Math is all about patterns and connections. And the real mathematicians who do this for a living, that's what they do. They grapple with these patterns and they come up with their own patterns and they notice and they wonder and they compare things and they look for something that they start with something that they know and then they see how can they use what they know to figure out something that they don't know. That's what real mathematicians do. And why not have our kids be treated as if they are real mathematicians, because they are, and every single kid. So what does
new math look like in action?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
So this new math that parents and you know, any adults who don't really understand it call it, it's really not new, because actually when the Common Core came out, the idea was to kind of highlight all these strategies that kids innately, intrinsically come up with on their own. So you can give a first grader a story problem that involves equal groups, which is not a standard until at least third grade, but they can figure it out. If you give them counters and you give them a context, they can sit there and actually figure out, you know. So all these strategies that the kids learn, sometimes adults think that why bother multiply four different ways? And what they don't realize is those are all different ways that kids can come up with if they are given the opportunity to investigate and to grapple with it. And we all need more than one strategy, because if I go back to what we were talking about earlier, if I'm trying to solve a problem and I'm stuck, isn't it nice to have more than one way to think about it? Mm. That's the whole idea, is that we don't just have one algorithm. If I don't remember if I'm supposed to carry that one over the whatever thing, you know, in the, I can figure it out a different way. Mm. And ultimately, not only that, but we want the kids to be critical thinkers and actually strategically choose which strategy makes sense for that particular problem. And so that's what really the whole idea of all these different strategies is for kids to see the relationships, to work with patterns, strategically make decisions about which one they would like to use.
So this is not your sit down, be quiet, take notes, keep to yourself math learning experience. It sounds like this is a type of environment that there's going to be kids talking and maybe debating, maybe even arguing a little bit, right? I mean, tell us a little bit about what someone might, you know, walk into a TCDS classroom as math is happening. What would they see and hear?
That's a great point, and that's super important. So math is not this individual sport that, again, most people grew up with that idea that, you know, the teacher is at the front, the teacher shows you the steps of this, whatever the topic is, and now you get a worksheet with 10 problems, and you go ahead and mimic what you just saw on the board. And, oh my gosh, I have no idea how to do it. I don't get it yet, but I'm going to sit there and do it by myself. So we don't do that. We don't do that at TCDS. So what you will see is the typical lesson starts with the launch of the lesson is a discussion. It's some kind of a visual prompt that the teacher starts the class with. Visual, noticing patterns, even if it's numbers. There's still a pattern in it. And the kids simply discuss it. There's not even a writing utensil in their hand. The whole idea is, what do you see? What could you try? How can you share what you see, your strategies? And that's usually how kids develop their strategies, is there might only be a couple of kids at that point who have a viable strategy, but others are listening and asking questions, and then they all learn it together. And so then the main task, the teacher gives them some kind of an in, so that the main task is not daunting. So they make sure that the background knowledge is there, any previous understandings are solid. And then the kids go off in groups of two, three, or four, and they actually work on this one task. It's not a worksheet of 10 problems. It's one, what we would call rich task, something that's more meaningful, context usually, or lots of patterns. And then they go figure it out. A teacher circulates and checks on each group, asks questions, doesn't tell them what to do, doesn't give them answers, but just kind of guiding them along. And then after there's a good progress by all the groups, they come together and again discuss what they discovered. And that's facilitated by teachers to get the whole point of the lesson across.
Yeah, so that is a very different sounding experience than, you know, what I remember, you know, in high school. It's almost like you use the sport analogy, like an individual sport, you know, it's kind of like the old traditional view. It's like tennis, right? Teacher hits it to your side, you volley it back over. Here, I got it. Okay. It goes back. You know, I remember getting, you know, 50 problems due tomorrow. The odds are in the back, you know, you just finding shortcuts to, you know, hacks to get these answers to submit that worksheet. Like, it sounds like in this kind of environment, you're kind of in a fishbowl in a sense, where the teacher is able to listen without judgment, right? There's a difference between judging and noticing, right? And so the teacher, it sounds like, is really just noticing what students are thinking, what they're communicating. And you can learn a lot as a teacher when you spend 15 minutes just circulating in the room, watching, listening your kids interact. So then, say the groups are just, they're kind of, you know, they're all over, and that's okay, right? You want to give every student kind of a jumping off point of the problem, and you don't want to close them off immediately. How does a teacher guide a group towards this understanding? Because I think that's another misconception, is that new math doesn't value right answers. What happened? Math, you get, it's right, it's correct. Like, what? So dispel some of that for us, that myth.
That is, yeah. So that's a huge one. And so it is important for teachers to always be prepared in the for the lesson's goals. What is the big understanding that we want to get kids to get to? What are some potential misunderstandings that the kids will have? And kind of be aware of even the prerequisite skills. And we actually, I just did a PD on this last Wednesday, actually, where I have a trajectory that I created for TCDS, a number sense trajectory that shows teachers what are the foundational skills that kids progress through from kindergarten all the way through eighth grade. And sometimes you can observe kids struggling in the moment because they are missing something from prior. And then it's the teacher's job is to kind of guide them along so that they can get there, because they can just jump over that hurdle. Also visuals, like, it's huge too. Number lines, tape diagrams, manipulatives. Every classroom has lots of manipulatives. And so those are all tools that the teachers, so eventually they do want to get to the right answer, but the answer itself is still not the most important thing. The process is a lot more important. So we're not out there to get right answers. We're out there to get the, did you follow the process that was logical, that made sense? And then we can point out that one of the eight mathematical practices is precision. That's only one out of eight. You know, so we can point it out. So like, okay, so we did such a great job. You guys praising the process, praising the perseverance, praising the collaboration. And then let's look at it. Let's see, what is there anything that we need to just double check? That's a minor part of it. It's not the most important part.
ST Math, it's a tool we use here. That's not the TCDS math program. Nope. I know a lot of parents, that's really the main thing that they'll see at home when it comes to what's happening here at school. So tell us a little bit about ST Math, the purpose of this tool, the how and why behind it, and why we're using it.
Right. So our main curriculum is actually illustrative mathematics, which is a problem-based approach, like I just described the lesson. And so what we use ST Math for is practice. So we know that kids, you know, it's great that they collaborate and work together and discover things. But if they don't practice a skill, just like with a sport, then they will not be successful because they still need to practice it. So we chose ST Math because it's a very meaningful way to practice math. It's very visual, very much pattern and problem solving based. And so instead of sending home, since we don't believe in worksheet, like we just talked about how, so instead of sending home homework with 10 problems on a worksheet, which research is very clear on how detrimental that is for kids, we feel like if kids just play ST Math at home as practice, it's a whole different thing. It's basically they're playing a game that's meaningful for their conceptual understanding. The parents have probably noticed that there's no directions in ST Math, and that's true for kindergarten through eighth grade, but that's intentional. So we want the program was designed by the Mind Research, I think it's called, Mind Research Institute. So they actually did research on how the brain works and how figuring things out, and all their games are designed with that in mind.
Yeah, because ST Math is spatial temporal mathematics. That's what it stands for. So.
Yeah, and so it's intentional. So the kids can figure out, and they do. Even when they get frustrated, they get stuck, we give them a little hint and they figure it out, and then they're really happy. So we want to, I think one of the things that parents need to remember is that we don't just have to, like, it's really important part of growing up is to allow kids to struggle. Mm. Like, if we take that away from them, we are actually shortchanging their career, both their personal and their professional growth, their educational growth. If we always want to just rescue them, like, oh, I don't want my child to ever feel frustrated, that's not realistic. And it's super important, I feel like, for them to experience that this was really difficult, I persevered, and now I know how to do it. Isn't that nicer than just, oh, here's 10 boring problems that I already know how to do, but I'm supposed to practice anyways?
It's not even about the math. Mm-hmm. Right? When we think about it, math, numbers, that's just another forum for a child, a human, to develop awareness, perseverance, problem solving. You know, I know some kids will say, like in middle school, when am I ever going to, you know, use this again? And to be fair, they may not ever work with polynomials, you know, once they get out of high school. But it's really not about the math. It's about who you become on the other side of that problem. How are you approaching this thing that is unknown to you? And you kind of hit on that. We want to be focused more on developing mindsets, a value system, a belief in oneself. So what tools, strategies, conditions are we providing that foster that long-term sense of self versus memorizing all of these strategies to get a right answer? Mm-hmm. I think that's an important distinction to make. It's almost not even about the math, right? It's about who you become through the process of grappling with this, whether it's math or learning how to read or studying a science concept or learning a new language, right? Who are you becoming through the act of grappling with this new idea?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So what advice would you have for a parent who is trying to foster this mindset at home? Because I know for some parents, they might just kind of throw their hands up like, I don't know how to help my seventh grader with this. Or let's be frank, like, you know, third grader. My daughter's in third grade. She'll, you know, bring home some ST math stuff, and my wife and I'll be looking at it like, huh. So what advice would you give to parents?
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, like I actually have some second graders who are into the bonus journey, and there is a puzzle in there that I am having a really hard time solving. Now, I have to confess, I haven't spent enough time to do it, but it's a spatial orientation puzzle type thing. It's like with a line of symmetry, but like point of symmetry involved, very tough. And so I'm aware of that particular game from last year, having some very frustrated kids. So I asked this second grader, I'm like, would you like me to, I can have ST Math excuse you from that game, because it's part of his bonus journey. It's not like a requirement. And he said, oh, no, Dad and I are going to work on it, and we're going to figure it out. And I was so excited. I'm like, that's the spirit. You know, that is so cool. And so I would encourage parents to try it. Ask them, you know, like, what else can you try? So show me, where have you clicked? Okay, and then let's see what happens. Watch what Gigi does. Gigi is the penguin. And you can even pause the animation during that time. You know, if you get the answer wrong and Gigi is showing you what's going on, look for a pattern, look for the visual representation of what's happening. Because Gigi always shows you what you did and perhaps what should be happening so that you can compare. It's a whole problem solving cycle where you try something, then you observe, then you adjust, and then you try something different. So this is like a cycle that the kids go through, and the parents can help with this this cycle by guiding the students to do the same. And at some point, if they do feel like, okay, we just don't get it, please email the teacher or email me. Sure. I'm always happy to help with SD Math. I love that. That's one of my favorite part of my job.
Let's flood Mrs. Post's inbox here. apost@tcdschampions.com. Parents,
go for it.
Send her some messages, things you're loving, questions you have. One thing I know about Aggie is her mind doesn't shut off when she leaves the gate here at school. You truly eat, breathe, sleep, math. So bring your questions to her. One other question here for you, Aggie. What would be some non-electronic, you know, computer software things families can do at home, just everyday stuff that helps develop that math mindset and that whole idea that math is figure outable?
So one of the skills that's super duper important, and I feel like it doesn't get enough time in our life, not in instruction and not in real life, is estimating. Everywhere we go in real life, we really do estimate, but it's not explicitly there. And even again, from little tiny kids all the way through high school or even beyond, you know, anytime that you have a real life situation, like, you know, there's a whole bunch of Legos on the floor. What do you think? How many Legos might there be in that box, you know, or on the floor? Because the box would tell you. And how do you? What can we do to test out our estimate? You know, anything where you're shopping. You know, so this cost $2.89, and this other item is going to cost $5.65. Instead of trying to add up the exact amount, let's estimate. Mm. Do we have enough? If we have a $20 bill, do we have enough to buy all these items, or which one should we put back? So it's all mental math. So mental math is like one of the best indicators of future success in mathematics and numbers and building number sense. And we don't do it enough. We always, so many kids and adults want to reach for that paper. They tell me that. I run into kids, especially in middle school, all the time. I can't do that in my head. I need paper. I'm like, yes, you can. Let's work on it together. So the more the parents can ask the kids to estimate and to use mental math, use patterns to do mental math, that will be very helpful.
Because I've actually seen this before, you know, in a classroom where there'll be an estimation exercise. And if you see a kiddo, you know, I've seen this where a kiddo will give an estimation and it's way off, like not even in the same ballpark, but yet they can complete an algorithm with precision. And so we immediately, oh, they get it. They've got a math mind. Well, no, actually, no, they've just been able to memorize that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's, and I've seen that time and time again. And so to pivot back to your response, the grocery store is an amazing learning jungle for kids. Bring your kids to the grocery store. It is from 3 years up, 2 years old, all the way up. Everything from patterns to colors to numbers to decimals to amounts estimate. I mean, it is a rich environment for kids. And so I would just encourage anyone with, listen with young kids, bring them to the grocery store and, you know, have them estimate, play around with some numbers. Mm-hmm. So, Aggie, appreciate what you're doing here at TCDS, bringing real math to the forefront. You're doing an amazing job. We're really excited about where we are and where we're going. So thanks for all your hard work.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.